flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
With LeBron coming to town, we'll cover the Wiz in the Beltway Blitz. Also, the Caps back in action tonight. Best team in hockey. We will look ahead to their upcoming slate, and we're going to cover the NFL as well as we welcome you back on G&D. We're brought to you by the law firm Condori and Murad. They're going to help you update your last will and testament, set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a consultation with their estate planning attorneys today at camlawyers.com. Mention us when you set that appointment up. They'll give you a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. They take good care of us. Long time now, sponsors of the show over a year, and we love that partnership. That's not a fun thing, but it's something everyone's got to do if
Seriously.
You're growing up with a family.
It's, you know, the I remember the first time we got home from the hospital with my oldest son, and it was one of those, okay, it's time. You need to start making those kinds of choices, right?
So they'll make it easy, make it smooth, and they'll do it with a little Grant and Danny flavor. All right, let's get to our Beltway Blitz and get to the gridiron. Our buddy, PJ Glasser from
right here,
BetQL
live. Look at this.
Network, is in studio with
look at
us.
This. Look at PJ.
No less. You know, it is funny because you got to turn on his mic for us, Darius, or maybe you can do it, Danny. You're in the building all the time, and you're normally on the phone with us. So when Darius came in, he's like, I think PJ might be joining us in studio. It was the first time I've ever considered that as a possibility.
Well, and I, for the record, said yes, and Grant said no, which I thought was tough. I was like, why don't you want PJ to come up?
I only like talking to PJ on the phone.
Grant was like, no, I don't want to see him.
Well, it's good to see you guys in person. Yeah, I'm filling in on the night show tonight on BetQL. I was texting Darius. I'm like, you know, I can just come upstairs and do the hit. It's like, that works.
A waddle up a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
Hang out with his pals. Get yourself some delicious Thai food. We're celebrating restaurant week. All right, why don't we just start with the matchup? Chiefs-Eagles, how do you feel about it off the top?
I mean, it's kind of the same way I feel about Chiefs-Bills, where it's like a pick'em type game. You get Mahomes in that kind of spot. It's tough to bet against them. For me, I think the best way, guys, is to just bet the game live. You know, if you get either of these teams at like +4.5, +7.5 from like a betting perspective, I think either of those are great bets. But just who I think is going to win the game, Kansas City in a pick'em. I mean, Mahomes in these kind of spots, they've won 17 straight games that have been decided by one possession. So I like Kansas City.
So Philadelphia to me has as good a recipe as anybody. I would have said the same about Buffalo, by the way, because you got Josh Allen and sort of the rest is academic. But the way Philadelphia defends, I feel like you can bother Kansas City, take away some of what they do well at this point. And offensively, they're not you know, I know they just put a 55 against my team, but bear with me. In general, I don't think of them as high flying. I think of them as kind of doing what Kansas City does right back at them, but with some RPO stuff and a lot of offensive diversity. I feel like they can win a 23-20 game.
I'm with you, which is why I kind of like the under, guys, at 49.5. You know, when they played in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, it was a shootout, right? You just saw the Eagles drop 55. Kansas City scored over 30 for the first time this season. People bet for what they want. They root for what they want to bet, right? So people are going to want to bet the over in the game. But I like the under. I'm with you, Danny. I kind of think it's going to be lower scoring. Got two good defenses in the game. So, yeah, I could see it being like a 24-21, 23-20 kind of game.
Let's talk Eagles for a second. Number two seed in the NFC behind Detroit. But you can make the case, especially with the Lions' injuries, this has by far been the most talented team in the NFC. And we just saw them up close and personal in the conference final. I was at the link. They're just loaded at every single position. And the one big question I had going into that game was Jalen Hurts' health. Well, I don't think he's had a great year anyway. And then he was banged up against the Rams. But he played really well and looked healthy. Now he's got two extra weeks to get even healthier.
They're really good. Guys, honestly, I think the Eagles probably should be favored in the game. Like, truly. Mm. But I think just because the fact that it's Mahomes and it's Andy Reid and they've won the last two, you know, odds makers know that if they make the Chiefs underdogs in the game, then people will just hammer Kansas City. But I agree with you. I think the Eagles are the better team. I think they're probably the best team in football, arguably them and the Ravens probably. But I think their roster is just, they're really good. So, Kansas City's going to have their hands full, but like we've seen pretty much the entire postseason, it's going to come down to turnovers in the game.
So here was what I was positing the week leading up to. I didn't think the game would go like it would, obviously, Philadelphia for Washington. I didn't think anybody saw a 32-point loss happening, but Jalen Hurts wasn't playing great. And I kind of kept going, well, what if the cure is playing Washington? This ain't Washington. So just kind of to your point about the under and about the way the score's going to go, everybody, I think, a lot of times overreacts to the most recent sample where, you know, Washington's offense was unbelievable against Detroit. You slow down a little bit against a great defense like Philly. Similar kind of pathology here, right, PJ, where you're going, you're leveling up in defensive competition. We associate it with Mahomes and Reed, but that Kansas City defense is the truth, even after they gave up a bunch to Buffalo.
No question. And you know what's interesting, guys, is a lot of times you look to fade the team who has a coach and a quarterback who's making their Super Bowl debut, right? Because a lot of times it's like, we're just happy to be here kind of thing. Now that Hurts and Sirianni have that experience, they kind of know how to handle the 2 weeks better. The game plan might be a lot better, right? Fangio's a great DC, and then obviously you have Mahomes and Andy Reid too. So I think Philadelphia is going to be a lot better prepared, especially defensively, in this game against Kansas City. And then all the talent they have to go with it on both sides of the ball. It should be a great game.
How about the coaching element of this? Andy Reid is now arguably the greatest coach ever, right? You might put Belichick or a couple guys over him, but he's as accomplished as anybody. Sirianni is thought of as a goofball, mm-hmm. who's just lucky to be here. But if you look at winning percentages, the guy's been in two Super Bowls in a few years now. He's legit. How do we feel about that element of this? Because I thought Sirianni touched a lot of the right buttons against Washington, went for a big 4th-and-5 that changed the game.
That was the turning point. Yeah, I mean, look, right, in these kind of neutral site games, I think the reason that Brady and Belichick won so many is because you have the best quarterback and best head coach on a neutral. You usually give that team the advantage. Kansas City, obviously, with Mahomes and Reed, it's the same thing. To your point, though, Grant, I think Sirianni has kind of proven to a lot of people that maybe he is a good coach. They got the two new coordinators this offseason to help him out. But it definitely feels like the guys in the locker room really like him. And, they've lost one game since week 4. So
that was not, it did. I don't think, PJ, that was the case last year. Like, everyone was at odds, and it seemed like everyone hated him.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. So, you know, I guess winning definitely cures a lot of things. And maybe bringing in the two new coordinators helped as well. But yeah, I mean, that's true. Last year they did not. But I think this year, Saquon, I definitely think has helped things. But it feels like he's their guy moving forward, and they're playing hard for him.
PJ, that was an in-person Beltway Blitz smash hit. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
People like it. Thank you, PJ. Hit that Wizard sounder, please, Darius. Okay, Chase Hughes to talk about the Wizards. Chase, there are a couple of things we want to talk about with All-Star Weekend, but Bronny's dad's team is in town. What do we need to know?
Yeah, so the Wizards are playing the Lakers again. They lost to them in L.A. About a week ago in one of their worst offensive performances of the season. L.A. gave them a lot of trouble on that end of the floor, and they're coming off maybe their worst offensive performance of the season last night. The Wizards are against the Toronto Raptors. who have had a really good defense recently, but they forced the Wizards into 27 turnovers, their most since 2020. Ironically, it was against the Raptors. That's how they've played for a really long time, as they're very physical. They force turnovers. And the Wizards shot just a horrendous percentage across the board, including from three-point range. Jordan Poole had one of his worst scoring games since he got traded to the Wizards. So they haven't been shooting well overall lately, but I expect Jordan Poole to bounce back, because it was a kind of one of those games that reminds me, like, hey, he's been facing tough defense all year, and he's usually played well. One team got him once. I'm assuming he'll be able to bounce back tonight.
7 o'clock tip with the Lakers in town against the Wizards. Chase Hughes is with us on our Beltway Blitz. By the way, Bronny now up to 1-for-16 from the floor on the season. How do they slow him down tonight? Because I am worried about that part of this game. Bronny taking over and running him out of the gym.
Well, we'll see when he gets into the game. You know, they tried him recently. J.J. Redick tried him. I think it was against the Pistons in the first quarter, in the first half, and admitted after the game that it wasn't the best call. He didn't play too well. So I think if we see him tonight, it'll probably be late in the game that's well out of hand. And, you know, just like Jordan Poole, we'll see if he can bounce back.
Yeah, 0-for-7 from 3 on the year, 1-of-9 from 2 on the year. Only 3 turnovers, though. It seems to me like, Chase, he's done a really good job passing the ball as soon as he gets it, when he gets the ball.
Yeah, I'll give him that, right? I'll give him that. you know, turnover is always an interesting stat. I remember Mo Wagner with the Wizards used to have one of the best turnover percentages in the league, and usually that means you don't get the ball very much. But, you know, he has been killing it in the G League in his defense, so if he gets out there tonight and it's in a blowout, it might be against some Wizards borderline roster guys, so we'll see how he does against them.
He is 2-for-2 from the free throw line this year. Key to keeping him off the free throw line.
Well, you know,
poor Chase.
You know, the Wizards last night allowed double as many free throws, or they took twice as many free throws as the Toronto Raptors, and they still lost the game. So I don't think free throws are going to determine this one, even if it's Bronny who's going to the line to take them.
Chase, well done. Thank you for handling
good
that
answers.
Very well. You're off the hot seat. Real question here. I don't know what the sponsor, I forget what it's called, but it's the Rising Stars Challenge. Maybe like presented by Minute Maid and Mountain Dew Code Red and Adidas. I have no idea.
The Grant and Danny Futures Game.
Futures Game. But a couple young Wizards are participating in that. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so the Wizards have 3 players going, and that is a franchise record. Bilal Coulibaly is making an appearance for the second straight year, as is Alex Saar, who's a rookie, and Bub Carrington, who is a rookie. So the Wizards have 3 guys, franchise record, and I think it's a good indication of you know, just what they're doing, trying to develop young players. You're not going to see, like, real tangible results in the short term, but this is one of those things that I think they can point to and say, you know, look, these are the best young players in the league, and we've got a few guys in that game. We'll see if Alex Saar can recover from his injury. You know, right now he's going to be out tonight with an ankle injury. They said that they took an MRI and are awaiting results on that. But all these guys are really excited to be in the game. I talked to all 3 of them yesterday at shoot around. It's interesting. Bub Carrington, first of all, he said that, you know, his mom told him the news and she was crying a lot. She was so happy about it. But also, he, when he was a kid, went to a Rising Stars game as a fan. So now he'll be able to actually play in the game and experience it from the other side. So it's a pretty cool story.
That's awesome. Chase, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you. Thanks for having fun with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
See you, brother.
All right, you got it. Wizards, by the way, 6-40 on the season. That's 6 wins and 40 losses. And I am here for it.
My guy Ace Bailey was unbelievable last night for Rutgers. It's a consolation prize if you don't get Cooper Flagg. I'm just saying, top of that board, please.
Cooper Flagg season.
Yeah,
I'm here.
Top of that board.
No joning on 6-40 for me. This is what
they
want.
They understood the assignment.
Just don't ask me to get all excited about 6-40. And we can all do this together. But this is what I want. Cooper Flagg time. It is time to talk about a good team. In fact, maybe the best team in hockey, and runaway right now, the best team in the East, the Capitals, who are back in action tonight. A rare early start time for the folks back here in D.C. Billy Johnson of the Post joins us now, Caps in Ottawa. Can you preview this one for us, the Capitals and the Senators, who are a decent enough team, over 500?
Yeah, they certainly are. These two teams played a really interesting, intense game in this building exactly 2 weeks ago. It was 0-0, went to overtime. Alex Ovechkin scored the overtime winner in a classic moment. It was a really good goaltending battle. It'll be the other two goalies for each team tonight, Anton Forsberg for the Senators and Charlie Lindgren for the Capitals. Caps are at the end of a very, very long trip. This is the longest trip of their season and the longest trip they've had actually in the last couple of years. It's the longest trip since I've been on the beat, 12 days, wrapping up tonight in Ottawa. Senator Carberry said this morning that the message is just to finish the job and get home tonight and, you know, play well tonight, get out of this trip, and get headed home.
Yeah, it feels like they've been on the road for a month. Billy, they've been averaging about 2.6 goals per game. That's my rough back-of-the-napkin math. You probably have a better number than I do. Over their last 10, ho-hum, they're 8-1-1, I think, over those last 10 games. But that goals four would rank 31st in the NHL. So, like, Listen, win 8 out of 10 every time, I'll take it. But is there one of those, hey, we're noticing this? Concern's the wrong word when you win 8 out of 10, but it's hard to be sustainable that way. Just give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to be sustainable that way. You're exactly right. Senator Carberry's been talking about it for a while. They've had a couple games on this trip where even though they haven't scored very much, they've controlled play and looked more coherent and cohesive and like they're playing the way they need to get those sustainable results. The game in Seattle that they won and even the game in Vancouver that they lost, they ran into a really hot goalie in Kevin Lankinen, but they played really well in that game. The others have been a little bit more of their recipe lately where they've kind of done just enough and gotten really outstanding goaltending to get the win in Edmonton and in Calgary. So they're definitely looking to generate more offense, play better with the puck on their stick, which has been a struggle for them for a while now in various spurts. And you know, it's great that Logan Thompson and even Charlie Lindgren have played so well, and they are grateful for that, but they don't want to have to rely on their goaltending the way they have lately.
Bailey, speaking of Logan Thompson, I don't think we've spoken to you since he got his 6-year deal. What did you think of that extension and the rate they got him at? And moving forward now, is there any chance they also try to lock up Lindgren, or do you probably look for a cheaper backup to pair with, you know, your starter moving forward?
Certainly, it was a deal that I was kind of waiting to see get done. We weren't quite sure where the number was going to come in at or what the term was going to be, but obviously Logan's had an unbelievable year, and the Capitals have really enjoyed what he's done for them. He really likes being in D.C. They wanted to lock him up for long term, and they did. You know, it looks like a great deal right now. He's been successful this year and has a track record of success going back to his days in Vegas. You never really know with goaltending, and that's true of any goalie who signs a big contract. It could work out great or it could not, but the signs are there that this will be a good deal for both Logan Thompson and the Capitals. When it comes to Charlie Lindgren, I was told a few weeks ago that they were a little bit wary about signing one goalie and not the other in season, thinking it might affect the dynamic and the chemistry of the locker room when they've played so well as a rotation this year and get along so well as individuals. I don't know anything beyond that when it comes to discussions of a Lindgren extension, but knowing that and knowing what they like about what he's done for them and that he likes playing in D.C., I wouldn't be surprised if they're in discussions. Obviously, he's due a raise over the $1.1 million that he currently makes as well, but if he's willing to take a deal that's not a significant raise over that and stay here where I understand that he's pretty happy and likes to be, then I could see the Capitals going that way.
March 7th, trade deadline. What do we think the Caps might be looking to do? I mean, would they be aggressive as good as they've been?
I mean, I think they will be aggressive. They don't have a ton of cap space to work with, somewhere between $3 and $4 million, which will get them a piece or two, but isn't, you know, Mikko Rantanen big swing type money. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I think they could probably use another forward kind of in that middle six area, someone who can add a little bit of scoring. It's possible that a guy like Ryan Leonard, if he chooses to sign at the end of his year at BC, which all indications are that he will, maybe he becomes that sort of trade deadline acquisition, but I also wouldn't be surprised to see them go after someone with NHL experience in that spot. And I felt for a while like they could maybe use another defenseman. They've had such success with the six that they've played for the vast majority of this year. Haven't had a lot of injuries back there, and Dylan McElrath and Alex Alexiev have been the healthy scratches. I don't know that a team with real aspirations of making a run and winning a round or two at least can really count on one of those guys being the next man up if there was to be an injury. So I wouldn't be shocked if they went looking for a 6th-7th defenseman as well.
Bailey, you've forgotten more about hockey this morning than I'll know in my lifetime. So you may not have been surprised. I will tell you that just me watching hockey games, I've been stunned at this Alexi Protasleep. He's on 32 goal pace from, you know, which he's already dwarfed his career total combined at this point in this season. I thought, okay, nice piece. He'll be a rotational forward, maybe a, you know, as you said, kind of a third line winger, or sort of hang out. This is a budding star to me, and I kind of didn't see it coming. Just give me your thoughts there.
Yeah, the Capitals saw it coming. I talked to Spencer Carberry about it, oh gosh, a month or two ago now, and asked him basically the same thing. Could you have seen what Protas has become coming? And he kind of said, you know, not to sound like they're, you know, so confident in what they believe in their evaluation of a player, but yes, they did, because he has the raw tools. They've seen how he's developed in the time he's been in the organization. They've seen, you know, how coachable he is, how hard he works. He's super intelligent as a player, and those tend to be the tools that allow a player to be really successful if they can put everything together, which obviously is what Alexei has done this year. It is pretty crazy to see what he's doing now, given that it was just about this time last year that he signed his big extension. I believe it was 5 years, and pretty much went quiet after that. He had a really strong start last year, but right around the time that he signed his extension, things really dried up for him, and he had a pretty tough second half. So to see him doing this now, where he's been so consistent all year, he's been one of their best forwards pretty much from day one. I certainly didn't totally see all of this coming. He's a player that I've liked, and he's fun to watch, and he does a lot of good things for this team. But I think anybody outside of the four walls of the Capitals locker room who says they really saw this coming is, you know, making that up.
Yeah, I'm with you. Thanks, Bailey. We appreciate you.
Of course. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bailey.
All right, get home. I mean, they've been on the road.
Seriously.
Forever.
A fortnight.
How would you enhance Washington's offensive line this offseason? If you're a Commanders fan who is one of the folks, and many of you, think they need to upgrade their offensive line, where can they do that? We'll look at that next on G&D.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tomorrow, we're going to be out and about in Leesburg ahead of the 106.7 The Fan live event at Tally Ho Theater. Our show comes your way from the Green Tree Tavern. Friday field trip. Leesburg listeners, stand up. Get on out. Let's party. Last time we were in Leesburg was one of our best turnouts of the year. It was
one of our first. Was that the first field trip?
Yeah. But we packed the gills at Spanky Shenanigans. A couple hundred people over the course of the day came through there. So Green Tree Tavern, we're excited to be back in Leesburg. Come on out with us. And then tomorrow night, we got our 106.7 The Fan live event that is completely sold out. The joint's packed to the gills. We have the last two tickets to get into that event that we're giving away on Grant and Danny today at about 90 minutes from now.
So we're going, it was left to me, which is very nice of you, to figure out what game we're going to play to give those ticks away.
We haven't played a game in a long time.
It's been a minute. Football season happens.
Yeah, games happen during like down times, or it's hard to carve out a segment for a game when the Commanders are on their way to the NFC title game.
Yeah, and that's the game we're playing, frankly, is that one. So yeah,
the game is called How Much Commanders Can We Talk?
How absurd is this? 800-636. I've narrowed it down to two choices for 6 p.m.
Okay.
Just weighing input, open forum here. Does Danny hate it? Does Danny hate it, which is kind of the newer one. I think we've played it a couple of times now on the radio program. Or the always classic, the always a mega smash hit, does Grant know the band? Does Grant know the band always plays well? The people like it.
It's a good game.
The people enjoy it.
I also think it's good on the radio because there's an audio element.
There's an audio element, yeah.
I'm fine with that. We haven't played that game probably since the summer.
You guys cool with does Grant know the band?
That's going to take you and Darius getting on the same page with some music.
Yeah, we have a bunch in the system, Darius. We've got previous emails we can go through, but I will we'll compile a list. Is that
now,
good for you?
I will say, when it comes to does Grant know the band, we haven't played that since we've been on YouTube, which gives us some limitations in terms of the amount of music we can play. So I'm going to lean towards does Danny hate it?
Oh, interesting.
Because Grant knows the for the Grant just behind the scenes stuff. For Grant knows the band.
Yeah, this is an off air conversation,
yeah.
Probably.
Well, yeah.
But here we are.
We'd have to.
But here we are.
Yeah. We just have. We would have to workshop
that. There's plenty in the system, though. I think. Yeah. We'll come to it.
What would happen? The YouTube audience can't hear what we're playing.
Yeah, and we would, again, that's probably off air stuff. But yeah, the YouTube audience wouldn't be able to hear the music that we play. Correct.
Okay. There are a lot of people listening on the radio that could.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, yeah. I'll just ask these questions off air. But
do we have any more technical stuff we can go through?
Let's play whatever you guys want to play, it sounds like. And let's definitely let the YouTube audience dictate what we do as often as we can. All right. So that having been said, we'll be playing Does Danny Know It?
Does Grant Know the Band is what we'll play.
No. We just said we're not
playing. No, we're doing it. We'll be fine. We got plenty of music. We'll be fine.
But what's the other one? He wants to do
Does Danny
one.
Hate It?
Does Danny hate it?
Which means you guys got to get together. I was trying to take something off your plate here.
We will get together.
All right.
We will do it.
Play that?
So we'll play that at 6 o'clock coming up in 90 minutes on G&D for tickets to Friday's event, which is coming up hot tomorrow. Everyone on stage all together, one big happy, 106.7 The Fanmily? 106.7 The Fanmily.
Oh, I get that.
I think is what we'll do.
Because it's fans and they're... Yeah,
yeah, why not? People want to fix the offensive line. I want to enhance the offensive line. I think we've got to work on improving the offensive line. I don't think it's a issue. I think it was a middling probably at times this year. They certainly had games where they were really, really good, probably some games where they weren't. But here's my question to those people. Where are you upgrading? Like, what do you want to do with the offensive line exactly? Brandon Coleman is your rookie, now going to be your second-year left tackle from Texas Christian, right? Are you replacing him already at this point? Are you moving him to right tackle or to guard? Shouldn't you be trying to get as much bang for your buck as possible from a third-round pick? If he could be a left tackle, that's a godsend. What about Nick Allegretti? You just paid him last year. Now, he's not paid a ton of money. He could probably easily be a backup on his salary, but he is the left guard at this point. Are you ready to bench him? Is that okay? I don't think anyone's trying to supplant Biotis, who played at a high level this year. Cosme may not be healthy, but when he's healthy, he's your right guard. He's a fringe Pro Bowl-type talent. I mean, right tackle, that's an area where you could tell me you're moving on from Wiley and you could sign someone pretty easily. But I guess my point is, Danny, it's not like they've got four openings because there's a bunch of free agents.
Yeah, or four obvious bums and there's one guy that's any good and you could sort of swap him out. I understand the point. To me, I think this is a very upgradable group, mostly based on Andrew Wiley's contract and the fact that Sam Cosmi probably won't be healthy at the start of the year. And it's probably unfair to expect him, once he is healthy and clear, to just, okay, hit the ground running and be yourself with no offseason, no training, you know, none of the things that it takes to get your sea legs underneath you. That's hard to do. To, okay, you're cleared in September. And by the way, it's live bullets. You're playing against divisional foes and or going to Kansas City and whatever. So to me, there's a vacancy or uncertainty right now at right guard. I want to do a lot better than Andrew Wiley at right tackle. Maybe that's problem solves itself. Maybe Andrew Wiley's my guard for a while. I don't have to cut him. I don't have to have
He's a candidate that you could just move on from him, too.
100%. You could save a bunch of money. It's like a $2 million dead cap hit if you were to let him go. But you also could say, he's not that expensive. I have an issue at right guard, at least for the short term. You know, what's the harm in having Andrew Wiley around? Or if you want to make sure you do better. So to me, I'm adding a tackle. I don't know if it's a left tackle. I don't know if it's a right tackle. I like Coleman just fine. Would I like Coleman better as the right tackle? They got to know internally if he can play that spot or not. I obviously, you know, I don't. I've only seen him on the left. But if you can find a marquee tackle, be it in the draft or, you know, maybe in free agency, I don't know how good the crop is. It's going to be better than last year, presumably, where Tyron Smith was your best free agent tackle that they didn't opt into. But if I add a tackle, whether it's right or left, what I do with Wiley then to sort of semi-replace or enhance or help out or be there in case for Cosme, I think is going to be instrumental. I would also like to do a lot better at left guard. So to me, it's a right tackle, left guard. Because Allegretti, I'm not wed to that. He makes Tressway money. I don't know why I keep picking on Tressway, but he makes punter money. That to me is not someone where I have to play him. Whereas I think Wiley was this year. Wiley's cap hit was so big from the previous regime that it wouldn't have been cost-effective just to move on, just to say, fare thee well, would have been devastating. Now, this offseason, it's not going to cost you that much to get rid of him if you want to, or you could have him as a nice utility spot, can play tackle for you, can play some guard for you, can do a bit of everything.
Hmm. That's real interesting. 2.6 mil exactly. Really, it's 2.66 mil in dead money to move on from Andrew Wiley, which I am doing. I've got all the cap space in the world. And if I keep him around, his cap number is 10.5 million. Sorry about it. I'm not saying that's a lot of money for a right tackle because it's not, but it's also not that cheap for a right tackle. Like the first year he was here, he made $4.2 million against the cap.
Mm-hmm.
This year, barely over nine. When you start getting up into the double digits of millions, you better help me a whole lot. I think you could do a lot better with $10 million. So I'm moving on from Wiley. I now have a vacancy at right tackle. Because the fact is, Danny, Cornelius Lucas, who I could have playing for me this year at less money than that, is not a downgrade, in my opinion. Like, just as a safety net, in other words, let's say it doesn't work out that I go out and actually land a really good right tackle. Whoopsie-daisy, Cornelius Lucas is my starter at $2.5 million, and you know I'm spending basically less than I would have in just dead cap money to move on from Andrew Wiley. Now, he is a free agent. So you have to re-sign him, but he's 34.
Mm-hmm.
He's a swing tackle, so it's not like there's going to be a huge market for him where you got to win a bidding war. So that would be the first answer I think we agree to then, sounds like, is right tackle's an area you can definitely upgrade. I'm curious, though, how aggressive people would want to be on the interior. With Cosme injured but coming back from injury, eventually becoming your right guard. Biotish is a $10 million a year guy who played really, really well early in the year. Maybe it should be brought up. He did get banged up a lot this season.
Yes, he did.
So it'd be cool if you could get a guard who could play some center and maybe, you know, do a little bit of both. But maybe the answer is left guard, right tackle. Maybe going out and getting someone who can replace Allegretti at left guard and make him a backup is the other way to do it. But what about Coleman? We could zero in on that too. We'll open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines on this. Did you guys see enough from Brandon Coleman at left tackle to feel like he could be the long-term answer there? Or do you think there's a chance they move him inside or over to the right side, and maybe they should try to go get an all-pro type left tackle? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. The Commanders' O-line was fine this season by most accounts, but like any area where you're not spectacular, you're trying to improve over an offseason, and there's some areas where they can do that. So we just kind of went through the line. I think you and I kind of sorted this out to say right tackle and left guard are areas where maybe if they wanted to spend money or use an early pick, they could probably stand to get better, especially if they want to move on from Andrew Wiley, who doesn't have any guaranteed money beyond this season.
So I was listening to this group of really smart guys from The Athletic get together and talk about offensive lines and kind of the theme and how good some of these teams that are remaining are. They added Detroit into that mix, a group that probably should be in contention to win the Super Bowl, but something happened along the way. I can't remember who they played and lost to. But these juggernaut offenses all have heavy investments in offensive linemen. And even if it wasn't a high draft pick, they're now high-paid guys, right? If they've spent first-rounders, second-rounders, all of these teams have really focused on that. Even Kansas City, who didn't have resources to spend pretty much anywhere, has said we will pay premium dollar for a guard or draft a left tackle high, etc. And it got me to thinking, while I'm listening to that clip, I'm going, well, okay, yeah, Washington didn't really have that. And then they actually referenced Washington specifically, saying this was a group that on paper is probably a bottom 10 offensive line, and you give a ton of credit to Bobby Johnson, a ton of credit to Cliff Kingsbury for scheming around those things. I don't want to scheme around anymore. I want to go full arms race on this thing. Now, you got to have players to do that. And there's not that many options. I mean, Cam Robinson's a free agent. That's a huge price tag potentially at a left tackle. You have to spend a premium draft pick probably to find one if you want to upgrade in some of those spots. So Coleman is kind of an interesting, I don't say tipping point, but sort of fork in the road decision here. If you move him to right tackle, you need a left tackle. If you think he's good enough there, you can maybe go cheaper at right tackle, but it's interesting.
It's not the point, but I'm also fascinated by this. I also wonder where the perception comes from that their line is so bad from a talent standpoint. Because we dealt with this all offseason, remember, where people would call in and act like they had the worst offensive line in the league. Like you were just talking about these smart football gentlemen, because I saw the clip too.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Tice from Yahoo, and you know, a couple of the guys from The Athletic who we have on the show who host their podcast.
Robert Mays. Yeah.
And they're talking about this being a bottom 10 line. I don't understand that, to be honest. You've got Allegretti at left guard, who started in the Super Bowl for the Chiefs last year and played a bunch for Kansas City on their line. You've got Biotish, who's a double-digit million-dollar-a-year center, who actually played at a Pro Bowl level for the majority of the first half of the season while he was healthy. And at right guard, you've got a guy, I actually think Cosme's season was maybe disappointing to some extent, and maybe like a little more reputation than like going out and being really, really good this year. But in the past, he's been playing at a very high level since going to guard. But he's a Pro Bowl type player, right? So, like, where is this perception of bottom 10? Maybe it's just we start with the tackles, and one of the guys was a third rounder, was up and down, and the other's Wiley, was a bit of a punching
bag. Well,
remember,
on paper, it was swing tackle Cornelius Lucas to start the season, and a third rounder that half the league thought was a guard. Andrew Wiley, who nobody thinks is any good. And one guy.
That's what I'm saying. The tackle position must be where the perception
Comes. But I love the Biotis signing, by the way, at the time. But Dallas was perfectly willing to let him go. I remember we had
They didn't have any money.
Yeah, we had a Dallas beat reporter on. And it's like, yeah, he's fine. I don't think Allegretti was special. So to me, Cosme was the banner player there.
I agree. I'm just saying I think the perception's been wrong about their line for a while.
Fair enough. But I guess my point is I see where it came from. Whether you think they're the worst or 10th worst or 7th worst.
Yeah.
My point is it was bottom third of the league on paper. And they didn't play that way.
Right. And the way I looked at it was they've got a guy who just started in the Super Bowl at left guard. They've got a center that multiple teams tried to pay $10 or more million a year. And they got a right guard who's a Pro Bowler. That's pretty decent interior. The outside spots were the questions. And maybe that's where it comes from. But what about Coleman, I guess, is the question.
So I like him. And I also, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's now my left tackle and I'm never thinking about it again.
Right.
I don't think he did enough. And this is not a criticism of anybody. Because you got away with it. You got to the NFC title game with a third rounder at left tackle that half the league didn't think was a tackle.
Based on that, isn't there some thought maybe you run it back because he's going to be better next year in the same way.
Entirely possible.
There's no reason to believe Daniels isn't going to improve. Everything that he experienced, now you go back and you get to work with all of your knowledge. If Brandon Coleman was a 6 out of 10 at left tackle this year or 5.5 out of 10, then you could bet on him becoming a 7 out of 10 probably, right?
Totally. I mean, and that's, again, this is the evaluator's puzzle here, right? I mean, one of the hardest things to do on the bad side of this is let somebody that you believed in go. Like, in other words, let's say for the sake of argument, they go, Brandon Coleman's our future left tackle. He's a stud. Let's say that he stunk. How long do you give him? A year, 2 years, 3 years, before you finally say, you know what? It ain't working. The other side of that is this, where you go, we were right. He's plenty good enough to be an NFL tackle. Is the ceiling as good as some of these guys that are stars? Is he, you know, Jordan Mailata 2.0? Or are we, you know, counting this as a win, but he'd be really good as a right tackle, or our offensive line could be that much better if we had a superstar there? I don't know the answer to that. And those are the kind of puzzle pieces that Peters and company have to figure out.
Let's go to Adam in Charlottesville on G&D. Adam, you listening on the radio or are you on the Odyssey app?
No, they don't broadcast down here. I got Odyssey up.
I was going to say, are we making it all the way out there? Right now, people on hold are in Charlottesville, Georgia, and Ohio. So we're killing it on the app, luckily. What do you got?
Yeah, you know, obviously, he did a really good year, you know, for a rookie. I think about him like Sandersill. You know, we drafted him as a slot guy, and he hasn't had a chance to really kind of get to his true position. You know, the same idea here with Coleman. Move him over to guard, see if he can get a decent left tackle out there in free agency and, you know, improve the line that way.
I love that. And again, the hard part then is to find the marquee left tackle. Or even a right tackle. Those are the guys that aren't available. Again, look at I keep pointing to this. Look at what I would have done last year is gone after Tyron Smith just for some security in case this Coleman thing didn't work out. They knew better than I did. You didn't need to. But that he was the best tackle on the market last year. Guys don't become available. If you want one, you have to spend a premium pick or get really lucky and find a guy that's a late rounder that develops. And maybe that is what Brandon Coleman turns into, right? A great first start. Maybe that's his floor, and you say a couple years from now, this is a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle. I don't know the answer to that. They do, hopefully. But it's not as if you could just go into free agency and just pluck one up for nice market value. If one becomes available, it's because there's a feud with the team. See Trent Williams. You know what I mean? Like, it ain't easy to find one of these guys.
I'm guessing Ronnie Stanley gets tagged or kept with the Baltimore Ravens. He's the best available tackle on the market, just as an example. 6'6", 310, longer than the line at the DMV, played the entire season. There were some questions about his durability that have gone away. The tape is really, really good, and he was tied for 11th among all tackles. Pass block win rate via ESPN, 92.5%. So, like, if you could sign Ronnie Stanley to be a left tackle, let's say, kick Coleman either over to right tackle and or inside, your line just got a whole lot better. And that should be the whole point, I think, is what people are getting at.
Yeah.
Like, Cam Robinson's another one, the guy that the Vikings brought in.
That's right.
After the injury that they had to Dad, Christian Darius.
Oh, yeah.
Damernasaw. 6'6", 335, guy that has proven in multiple organizations that he can play. He's going to be 29 years old going into this coming year. But if you were to bring him in as your left tackle, same thing. Now Coleman's your left guard. You just went, on paper, up a notch or two as a line. So I have no problem with them going hard in the paint for a left tackle. George is in Tennessee. What's up, George?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
Hey, so my personal opinion is we got five interior linemen right now and two playing at tackle spots. I think Coleman has a chance to be like a possibly like a all-pro or at least a one of those type of players in the future. We can pick up somebody better for like left tackle.
Yeah, you mean as a guard?
I think that's kind of the perception for whatever reason. I will say I'm just looking now at the free agent lists. There are way more high-end guards than tackles available.
It's kind of that's one of my thoughts there.
Trey Smith, you know, just as an example, is the best available of the guards leading the pack. But in the top 50 free agents listed by ESPN, there's like seven guards and a couple of tackles. So you said this, like you've got to be somewhat cognizant and aware of what's available and what isn't. But that might be good news for Coleman if he wants to stay outside at tackle. Speaking of ESPN, Bill Barnwell did a speculation on all the rosters of the playoff teams that have been eliminated. Who's going to stay? Who's going to go? I want to go through that exercise of what he did and see what he had to say about the Commanders. Plus, at 6 o'clock, we've got the last two tickets to our live event at Tally Ho Theater tomorrow. You got to be listening on The Fan.